right?
Let's see what we got on paper here.
We'll entertain a motion to come out of recess into public hearings for purpose of change of zone and conditional use.
You got it.
Motion, Mr. Wilson. Second, Mrs. Deaver. Any questions on the motion? Take a vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Mr. Moore.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to review the rules of procedure for county council zoning hearings. When council holds public hearings on zoning applications, they are legislative hearings because council uses the information obtained during the hearings to decide whether to adopt an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map in the manner requested by the applicant. Sussex County, in its zoning and land use decisions, does not discriminate against persons based on race, color, religion, national origin, disability, familial status, sex, creed, marital status, age, or sexual orientation. Public comments made on the basis of bias and stereotype concerning people within these protected classes will not be taken into consideration by the council in its deliberations. Each applicant shall be announced. The director will review with council the minutes and testimony from the planning and zoning hearing, and those minutes will be made part of the record along with any exhibits introduced at the planning and zoning hearing and any recommendation made by the commission.
Oh, he does.
The applicant will be called on to present and explain their application and present reasons supporting their application. Council may question the applicant and their witnesses. After the applicant has presented their application, council will provide an opportunity for anyone else who favors the application to speak. After that, any persons who oppose or question the application will be allowed to state the reasons for their opposition or questions. After that, there will be no rebuttal by the applicant, and the hearing will be closed unless the council decides to leave the record open for a specific purpose and time period. Further, the applicant will not be allowed to question persons who speak in opposition, and persons who speak in opposition will not be allowed to question the applicant or their witnesses. If you intend to speak, you are required to come to the front and stand at the speaker stand, state your name and home address before you make a statement. Please sign the sheet at the speaker stand. If you represent or speak for a group or organization, please identify who you represent. When you make your statement, please be concise. Do not repeat yourself. If you have a written statement, hand it to Mr. Lank, and it will be made part of the record. If there is more than one witness for the applicant or more than one person in opposition, please do not repeat points that prior speakers have already made. All persons in attendance should conduct themselves in an orderly fashion. No applause or other disruptive behavior is permitted. If you have a cell phone, pager, beeper, or other telephonic device with you, please take the time now to turn it off or switch it to silent service. At the conclusion of the hearing on each application, council may either approve it, deny it, or defer it to a later date. If the Planning and Zoning Commission deferred action, council will do likewise. And today we have two hearings on the document. The change of zone number 1729, the application of Ida C. Fawcett, Fawcett Heirs LLC, and Masses Landing Park, Inc., and conditional use 1963, the application of Ida C. Fawcett, Fawcett Heirs LLC, and Masses Landing Park, Inc. And Mr. Lank, I would assume that we will have both public hearings at the same time, but any action would have to be taken individually.
That's the way it was presented to the commission.
Okay, thank
and I
you.
Assume you can verify, Mr. Fuquay, if that's the intent.
Okay.
The first, I'm going to read both titles for the record. Change of zone number 1729 is the application of Ida C. Fawcett, Fawcett Heirs LLC, and Massey's Landing Park Incorporated. It's an application to amend the comprehensive zoning map from MR, medium density residential district, to an AR1 agriculture residential district, and to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Indian River 100, Sussex County, on parcels containing 50.83 acres, more or less, lying on both sides of the eastern end of Long Neck Road, also known as State Route 23, and also known as Route 22. and being identified on the tax rolls as tax map ID District 234, map 25, parcels 31, 31.02, and 31.04. Conditional use number 1963 is the application of Ida C. Fawcett, Fawcett Heirs LLC, and Massey's Landing Park Incorporated to consider the conditional use of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district for a campground to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Indian River 100, Sussex County, containing 50.83 acres more or less, lying on both sides of the eastern end of Long Neck Road, and being more identified as State Route 23, also known as Route 22, and being identified on tax rolls as tax map ID 234, map 25, parcels 31, 31.02, and 31.04. The Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing on this application on May 23rd of 2013. For the benefit of the commission's record and also for the benefit of the council's hearing today, the applicants did provide two exhibit booklets, one the original exhibit booklet, and then the second being a supplemental exhibit booklet. They are a part of the record. They have been since the 19th of March, or excuse me, since the 19th of March, excuse me. The commission held a public hearing, and in the process of that public hearing, we did have comments from the Department of Transportation, also known as DLDOT. They had provided comments on January 28th of 2013 in reference to a traffic impact study, April 10th, 2013 in reference to the preliminary site plan, and on May 13th of 2013 an entrance location approval letter. We also heard from the Sussex County Engineering Department Utility Planning Division on May 21st of 2013, providing comments more specifically relating to sanitary sewer. On May 22nd of 2013, we received a letter from Dan Parsons, the County Historic Preservation Planner, and making reference to historical and cultural affairs. That is a part of the record. We had received 55 letters and emails in opposition up till the commission's public hearing on May 23rd. The application was represented by Lynn Foss and other family members. James Fuquay, attorney with Fuquay, Urey and Willard Professional Association, Mike Ryman, professional engineer with Becker Morgan Group, Jeff Clark with Land Tech Land Planning, and Kathleen Walsh with the Castaways Ocean City, all giving testimony into the record. Mr. Fuquay offered findings of facts for change of zone number 1729, which are part of the commission's report before council. Mr. Fuquay also offered suggested findings of facts and conditions of approval for conditional use number 1963, also part of the record and in the report from commission. The applicant's representatives responded to numerous questions from the commission. Mary Shriver Fox, attorney with Steen Whaler and Shrider Fox LLC, was present on behalf of the Massey Land and Tenants Association and gave testimony. Jeff Marks, a resident of Massey Landing in Newark, gave testimony and presented a PowerPoint. William Higgins, president of the Homeowners Association of Potnets, Lockside, and Seaside, gave testimony in opposition. Charles Bartles, a resident of Massey Landing Park, also gave testimony in a PowerPoint presentation. James Chilick, and I apologize if I say anybody's name wrong. I'm really not good at names. David Gray, Betty Greenwalt, Sean Kilpatrick, Paul Arapa, Bob Tetchett, Denny Kaufman, Joan Race, Bill Holston, and Jim Gervin all gave testimony in opposition. At the conclusion of the public hearings, in reference to change of zone 1729, there was a motion. A second was carried unanimously to defer action for further consideration, given the amount of materials and statements received. That motion carried 5-0. In reference to conditional use number 1963, again, there was a motion, a second, and carried unanimously to defer action for time for further consideration given the amount of materials and statements received, and that motion carried 5-0. The commission has not yet made a recommendation on this application. It is on the agenda, I believe, for next Thursday to give consideration. I can't say whether they will act or whether they will again defer. Since the public hearing on May 23rd, I did receive a letter of approval of the site plan from the State Fire Marshal's Office. I received three letters in opposition, two from individuals, one from Stacy Marks and one from Susan Armiger, and the third being from Kirscher Engineering Incorporated from Steve Raines, and that's more specifically related to the traffic, and I believe Mr. Raines is going to give testimony this afternoon. In summary, the residents of the two letters expressed concerns about loss of lease lots and the existing homes within Massey's Landing, traffic, safety, rental increases, evacuation concerns, and flooding of Long Neck Road, and some other concerns that were already a part of the record with the commission's report. And I believe that's all I have, unless you have questions.
Mr. Lang, there's one thing I would like to question on, and it was just brought to my attention. I'm noticing the agenda has the tax map numbers, and I'm looking at the ordinance, and they coincide with what's on the agenda. I do notice on the summary that was given to council, there is one tax map number that seems to be slightly off, and I just want to confirm that what was on the agenda and what we have here with the ordinance itself was as it was advertised.
The numbers in the report are the correct numbers. Let me check an advertisement as we proceed. Unless you want me to do it before we continue.
I think I'm looking at the change of zone 1729 on the report shows 31, 3102 and 3104. It does not show 3101.
It should have said both because 31, no, it says 31.00, 31.02, 31.04.
That's what the report says.
That's what the applications say also.
Okay. The ordinance that we have here indicates 3101. It does not have 3100.
It should be 31.00, 31.02, and 31.04.
Okay.
That's the correct numbers.
So it was advertised correctly.
I'm looking for the ad now. The advertisement and the posting by the inspector has the correct numbers.
Okay.
The advertisement in the newspaper announcing the deferral by the commission has the correct numbers. The advertisement is correct, 31.
Okay. Thank you. I just want to verify that.
That's fine.
Okay. Is there any questions from council? Any questions from council? If not, Mr. Fuquay?
Good afternoon, Mrs. Deaver, gentlemen. For the record, my name is James Fuquay. I am representing the Fawcett family entities on the two applications before you today. The first application is to rezone the Fawcett's property from MR to AR1 zoning. And the second application is for a conditional use for a campground RV park to be known as Castaways at Massey's Landing. As was stated, because of the dependent nature of the two applications, we will present all of our testimony and evidence in one presentation, which will be the record for both of the applications. With me today is Mike Ryman from the engineering firm of Becker Morgan, Jeff Clark from LandTech, Kathleen Walsh, and Todd Burbage, who are both with Castaways, and several members of the Fawcett family. Including Lynn Fawcett, who will speak on behalf of the family. I would note that the exhibit books that we have submitted are documents that I think you have before you. In those documents are the plus comments and our response, an environmental assessment and public facilities report, a cultural resource assessment report that was prepared by Dr. Ed Otter, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers wetland delineation approval letter, a vegetation community report and comments from Black Creek Environmental Consultants, LLC, an ability to serve letter from Long Neck Water Company, a letter from DART, the Delaware Transit Corporation, proposing a DART bus stop, and the 2005 traffic impact study recommendations from DelDOT. As you are all well aware, conditional use applications for campgrounds have generated a lot of interest in Sussex County recently, and like the campground applications on Cedar Neck Road that you will recall last fall, and the Love Creek application earlier this year, this application also has drawn a lot of attention. The purpose of a public hearing, as well as the planning and zoning public hearing, which has already been held, is to provide an opportunity for everyone interested to comment on these applications. A petition has been submitted with numerous signatures in opposition to this application. The cover letter to that petition states that the petitions indicate how the local community feels about the faucets application, and basically the belief that the application would detrimentally affect the health, safety, and welfare of the residents. Now, as I said, everyone has the right to comment on this application. That's the purpose of this public hearing. However, as the council is aware, a zoning or a conditional use application is not a popularity contest, nor is it a public referendum, nor is it based on how residents feel about the application. It's a land use decision, and a land use decision must be based on the applicable law and substantial and credible evidence that's submitted into the record. Now, while I respect the concerns expressed by the opponents, those concerns were considered in the planning of this campground, and as you will see from the testimony and evidence that will be presented, those concerns have been properly addressed. And this request fully complies with the requirements of the zoning ordinance and is in accordance with the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan. Now, as to the application, the faucets property is located on both the north and south sides of County Road 23, which is Long Neck Road. As you know, Long Neck Road runs in an easterly direction from its intersection with Route 24, and it ends at the Masses Landing State Boat Launch and parking lot. The faucets land is adjacent to the state lands and Massey's Landing Park, which is a manufactured park which is owned by the Fawcett family. The faucet land on the north side of Long Neck Road borders Potnets Community's dockside on the west, the bay on the north, the bay and Mrs. Ida Fawcett's home, which is located to the east, and then it fronts on Long Neck Road. Jeff, would you point out where Mrs. Fawcett's property is? The parcel on the south of Long Neck Road borders Potnett Seaside on the south and west, Massey's Landing Park on the east, and again fronts on Long Neck Road on the north. The area included in these applications contains 50.83 acres. The majority of the land is located on the north side of Long Neck Road. And as I mentioned, there are other lands of the Fawcett's that are not part of this application. The lands not included in this application are Mrs. Fawcett's home property and the that's the land located next to the state lands, the boat launch, and Massey's Landing Park, which contains about 100 manufactured homes on leased lots that again is owned by the Fawcett's. The park itself was included in the plus submittal, but was subsequently removed from the plan and is not part of this application. So I want to make it clear that the Massey's Landing Park is not included in this application. Now, as to the rezoning application, currently the land is zoned MR with an RPC overlay. The MRRPC was approved by the County Council in May of 2007, for a residential plan community containing a total of 120 residential units. 48 single-family and 48 duplex units were located on the north parcel, and 24 duplex units were approved for the south parcel. That approval, unfortunately, closely coincided with the beginning of the economic slowdown and the subsequent recession and what was certainly a collapse in the residential real estate development market, resulting from the lack of demand for that type of residential development. And as a result, the Fawcett's land has not been developed, and it's in the same physical condition as it was prior to 2007. Now, prior to 2007 rezoning, all of the Fawcett's land was zoned AR1, and it had been zoned AR1 since the original adoption of zoning in Sussex County, which was back in 1970. Additionally, all of the land surrounding the Fawcett's land, including the Potnets communities, the Massey's Landing Park, Mrs. Fawcett's land, are all zoned AR1, as is the vast majority of the land on Long Neck Road. The rezoning of the Fawcett's land to AR1 will return it to the zoning designation that it was in from 1970 to 2007 and will be consistent with the existing AR zoning of the area and is a downzoning of the property to AR1, which, as you know, is the base zoning designation of the zoning ordinance. Now, the purpose of the rezoning goes to the ultimate proposed use of the property, and that is a conditional use for a campground RV park. The conditional use application proposes 322 RV campsites served by sanitary sewer hookups, water hookups, and electric connections. The park would also contain bathhouses with showers and toilet facilities, a laundry area with washers and dryers. In addition, there would be a general store, a cafe and snack bar, swimming pool, meeting areas, administration offices, and a maintenance center. The facilities proposed are for camp visitors. They would not be available to the general public, and they are intended to provide on-site services for the camp visitors. And Jeff Clark will review the plan in detail in a moment. Now, as you know, the purpose of a conditional use is very broad. The zoning ordinance states that conditional uses are generally of a public or semi-public character and are essential and desirable for the general convenience and welfare. And because of a conditional use's nature, the importance of the conditional use's relationship to the comprehensive plan and possible impact on others, the Planning and Zoning Commission and the County Council need to exercise planning and judgment as to location and site plan. So in considering a conditional use, basically you are directed to consider its impact as well as its relationship to the comprehensive plan. Now, there are a number of undisputed positive aspects for this use at this location. First of all, as far as sewer, the site will be served by a county sewer district. It will be part of the Long Neck Sanitary Sewer District. The park would utilize approximately 147 EDUs, and the county engineer has confirmed that capacity is available, and that is in the department's review comments. Water for the park would be from a public water company. That would be the Long Neck Water Company. And an ability to serve letter has been submitted. It is in the exhibit book. So there will be public central water provided for the site. Electric service would be provided by Delaware Electric Co-op. Fire and emergency services would be provided by the Indian River Volunteer Fire Company. And the Office of the State Fire Marshal has reviewed the plans as far as fire protection, and basically approve those plans as submitted. A copy of the Fire Protection Plan Review Report, dated June 7, 2013, has been submitted for the record. Now, in addition to the general store and the other services, it actually would be on the park site. There is a wide variety of shopping, restaurants, and service businesses located on Long Neck Road, as well as Route 24. Now, With most applications, and this application is no exception, traffic is certainly one of the most important aspects of the impact of the development. And Mike Ryman will discuss the traffic impact in detail, but because of the importance, I do want to summarize the traffic information. A traffic impact study was completed by the traffic engineering firm of Worth Rogers and Associates, Inc. in 2005, and that was done as part of that RPC-MR rezoning application that I mentioned. That study was reviewed and accepted by DelDOT, subject to certain recommendations in terms of improvements that the applicant would be responsible for. Now, as stated by DelDOT on page 5 of the March 12, 2013 plus comments, and this is in the exhibit book, DelDOT found, and I quote this, that conditions in the study area have not changed substantially since the 2005 study was done, and that the development now proposed would be similar in its trip generation. Therefore, our findings and recommendations based on the TIS contained in a letter dated November 4, 2005 are applicable to the current development proposals as well, and a new TIS is not necessary. As I said, that letter is in the exhibit book. So DelDOT reviewed and determined that the existing traffic impact study data is appropriate and a new TIS is not needed because it would serve no purpose. Now, under Delaware law, which is 9 Delaware Code Section 6962, Sussex County entered into an agreement with DelDOT for DelDOT to review traffic impact and basically to review the existing traffic criteria, to consider the effect of the existing traffic, to project traffic growth, and to consider traffic projected by a proposed use. Now, that's a determination that's made based on the expertise of DelDOT, which is the state agency responsible for traffic impact, and also for recommending required roadway improvements. And DelDOT has determined that that 2005 TIS analysis and recommendations are applicable to our application, and no further DelDOT analysis is required. 8 years ago. Now, I want to mention that that determination was based on the original information we submitted to PLUS. And that information was actually for a 575-space RV park. So as I stated, the application that we actually filed with the county had reduced that application from the original proposed 575 spaces to 322 RV spaces, or about a 44% reduction, or 44% less than the proposal that DelDOT found acceptable. So the record is clear that the 2005 TIS, as stated by DelDOT, is acceptable, and we've even reduced it further from what DelDOT reviewed at the time of their PLUS comments. DelDOT did note that one significant change on Long Neck Road was that improvements at the intersection of Long Neck Road and Banks Road and School Lane have already been completed, and that was a controlled intersection with left and right turn lanes. So that's already been done there. DelDOT did recommend that the county impose the following condition on our approval, which we certainly are agreeable to. And again, I'll just read that for the record. The developer should enter into an agreement with DelDOT to fund an equitable portion of the installation of a single lane roundabout at the intersection of Delaware Route 23 and Potnets Road, Sussex Road 22C. The agreement should be worded such that DelDOT may utilize the funding contribution for the installation of a traffic signal at this intersection should a roundabout be determined to be infeasible at DelDOT's discretion. The agreement should include pedestrian signals, crosswalks, and interconnection at DelDOT's discretion. And as I said, the applicant accepts that recommendation, and that would be one of our proposed conditions of approval. DelDOT also reviewed the site plan for the proposed RV park. There is a letter in the record dated May 13, 2013, indicating there is no objection as to the entrance location. DelDOT also, in their comments, requested that a bus stop be located on the site, and this is, I believe, a very important and beneficial feature of this location. In the exhibit book we submitted, there's information about DART, which I know you're familiar with. DART is a division of DelDOT that operates a resort transit system in Sussex County. That system is operated from late May until mid-September. There are various routes throughout the county, but one of these routes is Route 207, and that is the Rehoboth Beach Long Neck Potnets route. That route offers round-trip bus service between the Rehoboth Park and Ride on Route 1 and our site with stops along the way. Now, in the again, in the exhibit book that we submitted, there was a letter from DART dated March 4th, 2013. DART's letter states, and again I quote, given the location and proposed land use of your project, given the location and proposed land use, your project would offer an ideal turnaround in conjunction with a premier bus stop, close quote. This bus stop would have a covered waiting area. It would be ADA accessible. It would have bike racks, bench seating, and a kiosk for information at that site. So not only is the bus stop recommendation acceptable, but the bus stop will be a significant amenity for the park and additionally will contribute to traffic mitigation since it will provide service directly from the site to the Rehoboth Park and Ride. Another favorable aspect of the site is that Long Neck Road is a two-lane road with paved shoulders almost the entire length between our site and Route 24. This existing roadway will accommodate the RV traffic coming and leaving the park without interfering with pedestrian or bicycle traffic on Long Neck Road. And I think that is in contrast to at least the prior application that I had on Cedar Neck Road where there were no shoulders that did pose some difficulties. Now, Long Neck Road, like many low-lying roads in eastern Sussex County, experiences occasional flooding due to tropical storms and nor'easters. Similar situations occur in Lewis, in the Bethany area, and as you know, even occasionally on Route 1. Most nor'easters are winter storms, and since the park will only be seasonal, it will be only operating basically in the not in the winter. Any flooding that obviously occurs from November through March would not have any impact on the park. For weather situations that do occur during the season, and these would normally be tropical storms or hurricanes, which again, as you know, are not normal occurrences, but they do occur occasionally, the park will have an emergency plan. The park will implement a phased response to weather situations that will be coordinated with the Sussex County Emergency Operations Center, complying with voluntary and mandatory evacuation orders, as well as notifying upcoming visitors who would have reservations at the park to delay travel to the park and to Sussex County until it's authorized by the appropriate officials. There is a draft copy of the emergency plan, again, that's submitted in our exhibit book. Now, as to the legal basis for our applications, under the strategies for state policies and spending, which, as you know, is a state document, the Fawcett property is designated as being in a level 3 area, which is an area where growth is anticipated in the longer-term future or areas of environmental features. Now, as is stated in the county land use plan, much of the county's environmentally sensitive development area is designated as a level 3 area. Which basically acknowledges that these are part of a growth area. Now, when you consider the Fawcett site, and I think you can see from the aerial map there, it's surrounded by existing development, basically on all sides. It will be served by county sewer. It will be served by public water. It has adequate road access and the availability of public transit. And I would submit to you that it probably should be designated as level 1 rather than level 3. One of the most important legal aspects of any change of zone or conditional use application is the relationship of the proposal with the Sussex County 2008 Comprehensive Plan Update. The Sussex County Comp Plan contains two land use maps. The first is the existing land use map, and basically what that shows is the Fawcett's land as bordering existing manufactured home parks to the south and west. And in fact, the Fawcett property appears to be the only undeveloped land in the area and clearly would be considered an infill piece. And I'll just hold this up. Here's the Fawcett's property here. And you can see this is all developed as manufactured home parks surrounding it. The second map in the comp plan is the future land use map. The future land use map designates the areas that are growth areas and the areas that are intended to remain rural areas. The majority of Sussex County is designated as being a rural area, and that's comprised of low-density areas, protected lands, and agricultural preservation districts. The Fawcett lands, however, are designated on the map as being in the environmentally sensitive development area. And that is one of the growth areas created by the plan. So the Fawcett's lands are in a growth area. They're not in a rural or low-density area. As the plan states, the plan seeks to direct the county's most concentrated forms of new development to growth areas, including most higher density residential development and most business development. And that's on page 3-9 of the comprehensive plan. And again, our site is in a growth area. Among the goals and purposes of the future land use element of the plan is to direct development to areas that have community services or can secure them cost efficiently. Again, in our case, the Fawcett's land will be served by county sewer and by public water, so it does have the community services. Another goal is to protect critical natural resources. The campground utilizes wooded buffers and other environmental design features to protect the environment, particularly when you consider that the site is surrounded by older development, which basically were built at a time when environmental considerations had a lower priority or perhaps even no priority. If you look at the mobile homes around there, obviously there was dredged canals and units were built without stormwater buffers or anything of that nature. Again, everyone's at fault for that because people just weren't aware of the environmental impacts with some of those designs. Another main goal of the plan is to encourage tourism and other responsible commercial job providers to locate and invest in Sussex County. Again, that's on page 3-8 of the plan. And again, the Fawcett's proposal here deals with both of those goals, encouraging tourism and providing commercial job opportunities. The plan, again, states that central water and sewer facilities are strongly encouraged in the environmentally sensitive development area. That's on page 3-16. As I've already stated, they are available for this site. In addition to the obvious environmental benefit of having central water and sewer, the campground is designed in accordance with the ordinance requirements and environmental considerations and conforms to the conservation elements of the plan. That's found on page 4-1 of the plan. The campground will pay sewer connection fees and user fees, create jobs and secondary economic impact from the campers at the site, who will utilize local businesses, contributing to the economic element of the plan. That's on page 8-1. And Long Neck Road is more than adequate to accommodate the related traffic, which will be no more than what could already be generated by the currently approved RPC. Adequate shoulders exist to ensure the safety of pedestrians and bicyclists. DelDOT has reviewed and approved the TIS. The campground will provide the DART bus stop in connection with the resort transit system, so campers can utilize that service. The emergency plan will be implemented to coordinate with Sussex County Emergency Services for weather emergencies, and all of that is in conformity with the mobility plan, or the mobility element of the plan, which is at page 12-1. In addition, the campground is totally consistent with what the plan calls the big picture trends. The big picture, as envisioned by the plan, is that Sussex County will maintain its role as Delaware's agricultural leader, Delaware's tourism center, and Delaware's major growth center. That is what the plan envisions, and this proposed use contributes to that vision as Delaware's tourism center. And lastly, the plan states in its introduction that the county's approach to land use is as follows. The plan states that Sussex County encourages appropriate types of development in compatible locations at suitable densities. The Sussex County government encourages economic growth, strongly respects private property rights, and is committed to maintaining a viable climate for preserving agriculture. So that's basically the introductory statement as to what our plan is trying to accomplish. This application has no negative impact on agriculture. This application represents high-quality economic growth and is the type of growth encouraged by the plan. And as to respecting private property rights, the Fawcett family has owned their land for 75 years. Linford Fawcett actually purchased the land in 1938 from Mr. and Mrs. Massey. The state lands were at one time part of the Fawcett's lands and were actually sold to the state for the boat launch by the Fawcett's. The Fawcett family has seen the majority of the development around them occur since they've been the owners of this land, permitting them to use their remaining property in a manner that is consistent with the requirements of the zoning ordinance and in accordance with the goals of the comprehensive plan is a private property right that should be respected. So in summary, these applications are in accordance with the Sussex County Land Use Plan and the land use maps. With that, I'm going to turn our presentation over to Mike Ryman, who will address the traffic impact.
Thank you, Mr. Fuqua. Again, my name is Mike Ryman, civil engineer with Becker Morgan Group, address 309 South Governors Avenue, Dover, Delaware. So I just want to expand on and highlight in a little bit more detail some of the traffic items, stormwater management, sewer-related items that Mr. Fuqua has already touched on with you. First, I want to point out that, as Mr. Fuqua described, our project location is at the end of Long Neck Road. Long Neck Road is classified as a major collector roadway by DLDOT. DLDOT has a road classification system that they use to classify roadways, and this road is classified as a major collector. It has 12-foot travel lanes and 8-foot shoulders. Most of the entire way from our project site to Route 23. By DLDOT's definition, a major collector is of a similar classification, Route 24. And based on their definition, a major collector provides land access and collects traffic from lower classifications, channeling them to higher classifications. That's the definition by DLDOT and their functional classification. So this is somewhat unique in that we have a major collector roadway, which is a dead-end roadway. So it's unique in that we have a roadway classification that is actually higher than the existing condition that is there as a dead-end road. Our site is proposed to take access to Long Neck Road from two locations. Jeff, if you could stick our plan up there. And Jeff, you could point to the two locations. So the first location is Jeff's pointing to there, and the second location on the other side in that location. We made application to DLDOT to request a letter of no objection, which identified those two locations. DLDOT reviewed the traffic study in the context of that application and in the context of our request for a letter of no objection. DLDOT, as Mr. Fuqua had mentioned, made the determination that the traffic study that was completed in 2005 is still sufficient for this project, and I'll go into a little bit of detail as to why they came to that conclusion. The TIS that was completed was based on 130 residential units. The plan that ultimately ended up becoming recorded on that site was 120. So the TIS was for 130. The recorded plan is for 120. At the time we made application to DLDOT and initiated the PLUS process, it was for a 575 RV site project. As you know, and as Mr. Fuqua had stated, our application has been reduced to 322. So DLDOT made that decision based on an actual bigger application than what we now have before you today. This project actually proposes to reduce traffic from not only the original TIS, but also from the plan that is recorded on the property today. And there's a key point that we need to make regarding traffic, because we did hear at Planning Commission some concerns from the residents that the traffic study is old and there's been a lot of growth in this area since 2005 and it shouldn't be valid, and that the population has increased. It is factual the population has increased since 2005. But what's important to note is that traffic studies include this. Traffic studies account for growth in population. There are a number of committed developments in the traffic study that were part of the 2005 study. And a committed development is a development that is recorded or approved but not yet built. And I won't list them all, but for example, Baywood Greens. There were 869 homes not built in Baywood Greens at the time the traffic study was done. One of the larger ones, the Peninsula, 1,404 recreational homes. Bay Farm, 160 homes, 192 condos, 144 age-restricted single family, a number of commercial, and I'm not going to list them all. But the point is this, and that when the traffic studies are performed, you are required to account for the future growth that's already recorded and planned. So it is likely that the residents in the community are seeing homes being built and they're seeing things being done and thinking the traffic study is outdated, when in fact the traffic study included all of those projections all along, and in fact includes projections to go beyond what is there today. Notwithstanding the fact that the TIS was determined to be applicable to this project, there were some improvements that were required as part of that TIS, and this project is required to commit to those improvements. And the improvement that Mr. Fuqua noted was an agreement at Route 23 and Potsnet Road for either a signal or a roundabout, and that's to be determined by DLDOT, and this project would be required to fund an equitable share of that improvement. So based on those submissions and based on the review of DLDOT, DLDOT did issue a letter of no objection that was sent to the Planning Department May 13th of 2013. For this project. As it relates to stormwater management, we've had some meetings with Sussex Conservation District. We are proposing a number of green technology approaches to stormwater management in this area. And as Mr. Fuqua alluded, if you look at the surrounding developments, there's no stormwater management in those developments. Those developments are all prior to any stormwater management. This project would be required to meet the current DENREC requirements, which are very strict. In terms of stormwater management. And we are actually proposing a number of, I call them cutting edge, but unique stormwater management solutions. One, for example, is a pervious pavement. We're actually looking at utilizing a pervious pavement approach for a majority of the development, such that the stormwater will infiltrate down through the pervious pavement. We're looking at bioretention areas within the parking lot area near the main facility. We're looking at utilizing a number of filter strips. These are the practices that are the preference of DENREC and what DENREC looks to see as a priority, as opposed to the traditional wet pond approaches that you might see in some developments. In addition to stormwater management, I want to address sewer capacity. We've had a number of meetings with Sussex County Engineering. We are in the Long Neck Sanitary Sewer District. This project would require 147 EDUs. Based on our meetings with Sussex County Engineering and the documents provided to you in your report, there is capacity that exists for 147 EDUs. So we do have sewer capacity. We'll be connecting to the Sussex County Sewer District. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Clark, who's going to talk to you a little bit more about the details of the plan itself.
Okay, thank you. For the record, my name is Jeff Clark. I'm a landscape architect with the firm of Land Tech Land Planning from Ocean View. And there is a copy of this plan that I'm presenting from in the back of this smaller book. It's the very last document in that book. If you want to follow along, it might be easier to see. And I have also prepared some enlargements of this plan, again, to help you understand what some of the features of this site plan are. There is controlled and gated access to the campground directly from Long Neck Road. Long Neck Road has an existing right-of-way of 60 feet. As was pointed out, there are two access points, one to the north and one to the south. The entrances are about 900 feet from Potnet Seaside, or the Potnet Seaside entrance on the south, about 1,500 feet from the Potnet's dockside entrance on the north, and about 600 feet from the entrance to the state boat launch facility. And as you can see on your plan, the main entrance creates a four-way intersection with the existing entrance to the Massey's Landing Mobile Home Park. No campsite has been designed for any direct access to Long Neck Road. All the campsites will be served by interior street systems. Every RV site is served by a 20-foot wide maintained travel surface, which is shaded gray on your plan, and that is within a 30-foot wide private interior driveway. The paved inside turning radii, the entering, exiting, and throughout the campground are a minimum of 35 feet. That then is sized to accommodate the largest RV, also sized to accommodate the largest Indian River Fire Company or Fire Department vehicles that are currently in use on Long Neck. All 322 of the RV sites measure at least 40 feet in width, contain a minimum of 2,000 square feet, and there is a campsite detail in the lower left-hand corner of your plan to give you a little more detail for that. Each of the RV sites will be served with a sanitary sewer hookup, potable water hookup, electric, and on-site automobile parking. No campsites are proposed to be within 400 feet of any existing dwelling on property of other ownership and are at least 100 feet from Long Neck Road. No campsite illustrated on this site plan before you contains any state of Delaware or federal jurisdictional wetlands. The campsites will be graded for adequate drainage to facilitate or facilities meeting the requirements of the Sussex Conservation District. No individual campsite will be offered for sale or be sold, and no individual campsite accessory storage buildings are planned. All sites will be used only for tents, travel trailers, recreational vehicles, and equipment manufactured specifically for camping purposes. There are no cabins planned on the castaways at Massey's Landing site. A landscape space and wetlands buffer at least 50 feet in width surrounds the entire campground, which is the green ribbon on your plan. Those areas of the buffer that are not currently forested will be planted in a mixed deciduous and evergreen tree, shrub, and grass selection and will remain free of any buildings or streets. Areas of the proposed campground that are presently wooded will be carefully and selectively thinned and cleared in an effort to preserve as much mature vegetation as possible to, of course, enhance the camping experience. New native tree, shrub, and grass plantings, as well as native wetland plantings, are planned in connection with the site development and infrastructure construction. There's no phasing of the 322 campsites are proposed. All 322 sites will be constructed at one time with the goal of operating the first camping season commencing in 2014. I'm going to move now to a series of enlarged views. The first one is a view of the main entrance with the park office, general store, fitness center, and cafe. And this building complex is at the gateway to the campground in a central location that's accessible to the guests who are on foot, if they're riding their bicycles or using electric golf carts. The general store, fitness center, cafe, and snack bar are intended primarily for the occupants of the campground. Now, some of the features here are numbered. Number five is on that plan is a kiosk where golf carts are rented to guests. If you look at the plan, the larger plan, you'll see that there are golf cart-sized parking spaces throughout the site. Number four is a campground concierge kiosk for guest services. The feature numbered 17 is the proposed DART bus stop that Mr. Fuquay referred to earlier. The entrance to the campground is 30 feet wide with a dedicated bus and emergency services lane, actually a requirement of the DART bus folks. And as was mentioned earlier, the bus stop's required to have a shelter, a bench for seating, a lighting trash container, all, of course, designed to DART standards. At the end of the main parking lot in this area is a central trash dumpster site. The campground operator will contract with a local trash hauler for daily pickup at individual campsites, and the two dumpster locations will be in conformance with the county regulations. There are a number of campground recreational activities, which include number eight, for example, is a swimming pool with separate pool bathhouse facility next to number 10, which is one of five RV bathhouses planned. A typical bathhouse floor plan is found in tab 8 of the larger book. Each bathhouse is handicapped accessible, including laundry facilities, sinks, toilets, and showers. Number 11 is a nature center and activities lodge, which is really planned as the starting point for age-appropriate eco-tours of the site to learn about the plants and animals that live in and around their campsites. Castaways Ocean City has developed an extensive children's eco-tour program using environmental science college students to run the program, and the same is planned here at Massey's. Between the swimming pool and the nature center is a 3/4-acre open and wooded outdoor activity center. Number 18 on this plan is one of two proposed crabbing and fishing piers designed as part of the hands-on nature tour experience, and also a place for camper dogs to access the water for a protected swim. Number 3 is a kiosk housing the aquatic boat rental operation. And we've had this plan before the state permitting agencies, both state and federal agencies, and have warranted to them that all the small craft will be non-motorized. That includes kayaks, canoes, rowboats, paddle boats, small sailing vessels like sunfish and sailing dinghies. And this is primarily a recreational learning center for new sailors and kayakers who can learn in that protected pond that's at the top of this exhibit here on site and out of harm's way from the powerboat traffic in Massey's Ditch. The pond water depths in that pond there in that area are about 3 feet at low tide. Now there's a second exhibit that shows the tent area. Yes. One other purpose of the Aquatic Rental Center is to accommodate the tent-only campers, and campers who choose to stay in their tents in one of the 10 remote proposed tent sites actually park their car down by the Aquatic Rental Center, load their duffel into a canoe, and paddle to their tent site, which is number 15 here on this plan, out on that land, that spit of land surrounded by water. The tent area, as you can see, is set on an island that's wooded, and is also planned to have a small canoe dock and a small bathhouse for the tent campers. And it's connected to the mainland by an elevated walkway for safety purposes. And again, there are only 10 of the 1,000-square-foot tent sites, tent-only sites planned. Number 12 and 13 are both envisioned as weather-protected meeting areas for camper group recreational gatherings. And they're activity centers for foul weather days when the groups are too large for one of the two smaller pavilions that are on site. A third enlarged view then is the beach area of the plan, the northeast corner of the large site plan there. And at that location, if you can still see the enlarged photo, there is a naturally occurring beach area on the Fawcett property where the sandy beach actually extends into shallow water. And right where Michael's pointing. And the site plan that we're proposing envisions an expansion to that shallow beach for use by the campground guests. The U.S. Army Corps guidelines allow for a minor fill in this kind of a situation for up to a tenth of an acre. So that would include that darker yellow area, if you will, that's right adjacent to the waters, the blue water's edge there. Number 20 is an area adjoining the swimming beach, again set aside for pet owner campers and their dogs. Number 14 is a proposed beach bathhouse facility, cafe, and beach grill, as shown here to conform with the code. This building will be placed at least 50 feet landward from the mean high shoreline. Number 19 is the second of two fishing crabbing piers proposed, and as we presented to the state and federal agencies, there will be no boat mooring associated with either of these piers. The last enlarged exhibit. Number one on that plan shows one of two pavilion sites that are planned. This is envisioned as an open air or screen-in roofed structure. Have some lighting for night, some tables and barbecue cooking facilities, concrete floor similar to what you might see at Cape and Lopen State Park. The pavilions, there are several of these throughout the site. They're placed in wooded areas outside of the perimeter landscape buffer, and they're accessible to an area of campers. Number 10, again, is one of the five bathhouses planned. Number 16 is the campground maintenance center. That's a 4,800-square-foot building planned to house the maintenance needs of the campground. And then along the bottom of the plan there is the beginning of 75 parking spaces that are provided in front of the building and along the entire driveway leading from the main entrance, again, for employee parking. This is the second of two campground trash dumpster locations, which is at the end of this street next to number 16. As was stated earlier, the Fawcett property is located in the environmentally sensitive developing area as established and defined in the comprehensive plan. And in addition to the public water and sewer services that Mr. Fuqua had alluded to, there are some other additional safeguards that are planned. One of the issues that was brought out in the PLUS process was that there may be some potential for endangered species. The Fawcett family authorized a Denrick Natural Heritage and Endangered Species Program biologist to visit the site in February of this year, and there's a report in your book that we've turned in that says that that concludes that there are no rare, threatened, or endangered species found. They also, at the same time, actually subsequent to that first study, they had a second piece of correspondence that came into the file that said there was a possible eagle's nest on the site. So again, we went through the process with our environmental consultant and folks from Denrec and learned that there is an eagle that's on the Lynch Thicket. It's actually out of the range of the air photo. It's about 1,200 feet away from the boat launch, but there is a nesting pair there. And the required buffer for development from an eagle currently is 330 feet, so the 1,200 feet, we're glad they set up a residence there. So. The entire Fawcett property was mapped by an environmental expert and surveyed by a licensed surveyor to establish the boundary of both the federal and state wetlands. You'll find in your book a letter from the Corps of Engineers, this wetland boundary survey has been certified as being accurate. That letter is dated the 28th of 2012. Now, this wetlands boundary then establishes the point from which the Sussex County required 50-foot buffers are measured, as were shown on the plan. And again, no improvements or land disturbing activities exist within any of these required buffers except those that are excluded from the buffer requirements in your code. Those exclusions include the man-made bodies of water and the water-dependent maritime and recreational facilities that require the approval of the appropriate federal and state of Delaware agencies. And in this particular case, that would be the beach area that we talked about earlier and the two crabbing piers. We've also been before the joint processing group. There are 7 individual permits which will be required in connection with the campground project for shoreline erosion control, the two crabbing piers, the elevated walkway that I referred to, the canoe pier for the remote tenting area, the small watercraft, non-motorized watercraft mooring, and the beach nourishment. So the combined wetlands and subaqueous lands permitting is actually going to require a fair amount of mitigation, as we've been told by the agencies. That mitigation on this site takes the form, actually two forms. It takes the form of, number one, eradication of what are called invasive plant species, such as Phragmites, and then the introduction of native beneficial plantings such as cordgrass and loblolly pine. Most of these areas that are on this plan are rendered yellow, where they are either degraded or in need of some upgrading. Detailed planting plans then will be developed as a part of the Denrec and federal permitting process and will form the basis for plantings that are required by Sussex County in that 50-foot buffer. All the fills that are required for the mitigation areas will come from the large white. Again, you can look at the photo. You see a large white patch in the woods. That is actually a dredge spoil disposal area. And so no imported fill will be required here. This will all come from material that's on site. And I think it was mentioned earlier that based on the current standards, this site certainly will be required to be constructed to a much higher standard of environmental protection than many of our neighbors.
The next speaker will be Kathleen Walsh, who will basically be managing the park.
Ms. Beaver, gentlemen of council, thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today. My name is Kathleen Walsh, and this is my 25th year with the Burbage family of companies. I am the Chief Operations Officer at Castaways Resort. I'm a member of the National Association of RV Parks and Campgrounds, the Maryland Campground Owners Association, the Northeast Campground Association, and I am part of the National Professional Park Operators Program. I've been with Castaways Ocean City since its planning stages and am still there today. As a team with the Burbage family of companies, we set out to create a first-class RV resort in our area. Today, I believe we operate one of the highest-rated parks in the nation, and this was just affirmed to us by the Good Sam Travel Directory. We just received a perfect five-diamond rating from them, which is akin to the five-diamond rating that a hotel would receive from the AAA organization. So we're very proud of that. And if we are allowed to move forward with this project in your county, the responsibility for running the park would fall upon me. I did attend the planning and zoning hearing, and I did hear the concerns that these fine folks had. And I think we're a lot closer than it appears that we are, because a lot of their concerns are my concerns. Their biggest concern seems to be traffic along Long Neck Road. And if you've been in the hospitality industry, the last thing you want is someone checking into your facility who has just set in a long line of traffic in summer heat. They are not at all hospitable when they walk into your lobby if they've had that to deal with on their way in. At Castaways in Ocean City, I believe we've created a couple stopgap measures that prevent this from happening. First of all, I have 378 sites there, and I have no traffic issues at Castaways Ocean City. I simply do not have long lines of people backing up on the road waiting to get into our park. We have implemented, using modern technology, a way that people can go directly to their site, bypass check-in, text us when they're on site, and we come and check them in at their site. They do not back up on Eagles Nest Road. We also implement a policy where if they bring more than the required number of vehicles to get them there, we charge them for that. So we put in place a fee-based policy that prevents them from bringing trailers, boats, golf carts, you know, multiple vehicles. We bypass early check-in fees. If we feel it's going to be a busy day and we don't want everyone backing up at 2 p.m., we'll let them come in early and we'll not charge them an early check-in fee. So we've perfected the art of getting a lot of people in and out of Castaways Ocean City. We are on a dead-end road, the same as Long Neck Road, but unfortunately we have no shoulders, and so it's a little less attractive than this particular road. In the time that I've been there, we've had no incidents of pedestrian accidents, pedestrian injuries. We do have multiple golf carts across Eagles Nest Road from Eagles Landing Golf Course, and we've had no incidents with them. The other concern I believe these folks have is evacuation, and unfortunately, that's something I'm way too familiar with because I've been at Castaways Ocean City during both Irene and Sandy. I work very closely with Worcester County Emergency Management Services. At the time of Hurricane Irene, I was about at a 75 or 80% occupancy. That's a lot of folks to move out of your area when a storm is bearing down on you. I have to be a little more proactive than emergency management because the bridges close to high-profile vehicles at 35 or 40 miles an hour. I cannot wait until the winds are high to get my folks out. They have to get out before the winds increase. I've not had any incidents with anyone being stranded in our park. I don't want my guests on site when a hurricane hits. I get them out of there. And they're, for the most part, very cooperative. And if they're not cooperative, I take measures to make them cooperative, such as unplugging their utilities and forcing them out. Regarding the economic impact of the area, I can tell you that Ocean City has been so pleased with the folks we bring to their area that they actually built a bus stop for us in town. My folks come They park. They do not drive their RVs back and forth on our road. They park and they use the bus service. The traffic happens when they come in and when they go out. They're not back and forth all day long. They go into the surrounding community and they spend very real dollars in the local communities. And lastly, I'd like to address the environmental impacts. We take great pride in at Castaways Ocean City in our stand on the environment. We have been certified a Planet Green Park by the National Association of Campgrounds. We have numerous educational programs in our park each week to teach our visitors how to care for the environment. We work with Maryland Coastal Bays Program to protect our bays. And we're now working with the Delmarva Discovery Center on how to take care of our local reptiles. So we're very proud of our policies there. Again, if the park is permitted to move forward in Sussex County, the responsibility would be on me to run it. And anyone that's worked with me can tell you I run a tight ship. I have 9 brothers and sisters, so I'm used to running a tight ship, and I run one at Castaways Ocean City, and I would do the same here. Thank you very much.
Excuse me, how many acres is the Ocean City site?
We have 50 acres, 378 sites at our current facility. Thank you.
And I think Mr. Fawcett has a couple comments.
Ms. Deaver, gentlemen, good afternoon. My name is Linford P. Fawcett III, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to present the application for the campground on the Fawcett family property, which is located at the end of Long Neck Road in Millsboro, Delaware. I am joined this afternoon by my mother, Ida Fawcett, my brothers and sisters, and some of our children. All are members of the Fawcett family, and all are Sussex County residents. Our family has owned or maintained a residence on this property since 1938, when it was purchased by my grandfather from Gary and Nora Massey over 75 years ago. My mother has told us that she visited the property in 1948 when she was dating my father, and at that time it was a narrow concrete road, so the roads have definitely improved since then. My family has lived and worked on the property since the early 1960s. The Fawcett family owned and operated a boat launch, a bait and tackle facility and bait stand, and a boat livery. We sold boat fuel for many years in that same location where the state of Delaware boat launch facility now resides. Our family sold our land to the state of Delaware for that facility in the 1990s. This past year, our family has partnered with the Burbage family from Berlin, Maryland, who, as you just learned, has lived on the Eastern Shore for generations and has a proven track record of operating a successful businesses and a very successful waterfront campground in Ocean City. I have personally, and members of the Fawcett family, have visited the Castaways in Ocean City, and we have found it to be a first-class example of a resort RV campground. Our business partnership with the Burbage family allows the Fawcett family to keep the property indefinitely for our future generations. In fact, our business agreement with the Burbages uses the term multi-generational. My mother, my brothers, sisters, and I have all watched as Long Neck Road has developed over the years. We have always respected the rights of the other property owners to develop and use their properties in appropriate ways. The Fawcett family is now prepared to use our property in a way that we feel that best benefits our family now and for our generations to come. We look forward to your favorable recommendation and to a successful and long-term tourist business here in Sussex County. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Fawcett. The good news is I'm almost complete. Just have a little bit more, so that's the bad news. I do want to submit proposed findings for change of zone 1729, proposed findings for conditional use 1963, and proposed conditions for conditional use 1963. I want to read the conditions just for the benefit of people who are here, and you can refer to the findings. The conditions on conditional use 1963, which we're proposing that you would place on this, would be: one, the maximum number of RV units shall not exceed 322. Number two is the Del Dot requirement that I mentioned when I made my presentation, so I won't repeat that. Number three, the conditional use shall be served by the Long Neck Sanitary Sewer District. Four, the conditional use shall utilize public water from Long Neck Water Company. Five, stormwater management and sediment and erosion control facilities shall be constructed in accordance with applicable state and county requirements and maintained using best management practices. Number six, the applicant shall cooperate and coordinate with the state and county emergency preparedness offices to develop and implement an emergency evacuation plan. Number seven, the campground RV park may be open no earlier than April 1st each year and shall close no later than October 31st of each year. Number eight, and the campground RV park shall remain vacant and no campers or RVs shall be stored on the sites during the period that the park is closed, except for applicant-owned park model units. Number nine, there shall be no accessory buildings located on individual campsite lots. Number 10, All units to be used for the purpose of human habitation on campsites shall be tents, travel trailers, recreational vehicles, and equipment manufactured specifically for camping purposes. Number 11, one sign not exceeding 32 square feet per side with lighting shall be permitted. Number 12, the applicant shall plan the entrance design to accommodate a bus stop and turnabout in accordance with DART. And 13, final site plan shall be subject to review and approval by the Sussex County Planning and Zoning Commission. I believe that the factual and legal foundation of our application is clear and substantial and fully justifies your approval of our applications with appropriate conditions. And rather than summarize everything that we've already established, I will just refer to what we've already presented to you. Now, as you know, the applicant does not normally have an opportunity to present rebuttal against arguments that are raised by the opponents. But again, as you know, since we've already had the planning and zoning hearing, we basically have heard some of the comments that basically will be presented. So I do want to comment on some of the main points. And I would ask you to keep my comments in mind when you consider the the comments from the opposition. First of all, we've already discussed this, but the traffic impact study, DelDOT is the regulatory agency determining traffic impact. There's no mistake or misunderstanding by DelDOT on this application. DelDOT stated what they found, and that was that conditions have not changed substantially since the 2005 TIS was performed and analyzed, that TIS included 11 committed developments that would be built in the future. So much of what has occurred out there basically is already included in this traffic impact study. In fact, much of what is in that study still has not been built. And that was all taken into consideration by DelDOT. There's no mistake, there's no misunderstanding, there's no confusion. DelDOT states that our proposed development would be similar in trip generation, and basically their findings and recommendations, as they stated in their 2005 letter, are applicable to these applications, and new TIS is necessary. I already mentioned to you that DelDOT's opinion was based on a larger RV park than we're actually proposing. What we're proposing is actually 44% less than what they reviewed. And again, pursuant to Delaware law, the county has an agreement with DelDOT, and DelDOT is the authority which the county utilizes in making traffic determinations. There was also, the opponent said that basically there would be potential risk to emergency services, to school bus, and delaying traffic in emergency situations. Now, as it has been stated, the majority of these RVs arrive at the site, they stay at the site. They're not up and down the road all day long, and this is particularly true in this case where the DART bus system would be available providing the resort service. As to the tropical storm situations, emergency situations, flooding situations, because of the nature of the warnings and the cooperation and emergency plan that will be implemented, the park would be evacuated early, particularly because of the wind situations that Mrs. Walsh mentioned, so that they're not going to contribute to any safety problem in those emergency situations. There was also expressed at the planning and zoning hearing that at the boat parking lot occasionally or at times, vehicles park on the shoulder of the road down at the end there. I don't know whether they're permitted to park there or not, but that's not a situation that we're causing or would cause. If they're allowed to park, they're allowed to park. If they're not allowed to park, it's an enforcement problem, you know, with the state as far as them parking there. But it really doesn't address our situation. So really, there really is no basis for a demand that a new TIS be done because DelDOT said it's not necessary. The opposition also presented an argument that you'll probably hear that recreational facilities should not be permitted in this campground, mainly because the conditional use ordinance permits retail uses, but it doesn't address whether recreational facilities are permitted. Now, retail is mentioned in the conditional use as a permitted use in a campground because that's a commercial use, and that certainly would not be permitted unless it was authorized. But a recreational use or recreational activities are normal and customary accessory use to residential or campground uses. And while the ordinance doesn't mention it specifically, it also doesn't prohibit it, and which is evident, of course, if you consider that all the other campgrounds I'm aware of in Sussex County have recreational facilities. And I'm sure if I was in here proposing a campground without recreational facilities, you would find fault with that application. So again, I think it's a baseless argument, and it doesn't really make any common sense. The opponents claimed that our plan fails to provide the required buffers from existing dwellings. And what that refers to is there is a provision in the conditional use ordinance that a campground must be at least 400 feet from any existing dwelling on property of other ownership. And it was claimed that a 400-foot buffer should be provided from the Potnets dockside manufactured homes, the Potnets seaside manufactured homes, and the Massey's Landing Park homes. Now, as I said, those are all manufactured home parks, and they are manufactured homes. Now, under the Sussex County Zoning Ordinance, the definition of a dwelling, which would be applicable to this, excludes manufactured homes. And by an ordinance that was amended several years ago, manufactured homes are considered to be manufactured homes, trailers, mobile homes, single wides, double wides, you know, the general definition. So the county's ordinance is that you do not have to be 400 feet from manufactured homes. That's what the law says. Now, some of the opponents are represented by Mary Schreider Fox. She'll be speaking in a moment. In her presentation, she acknowledged that our plan technically meets the legal definition of the 400-foot buffer. All right. Now, I want to make it clear, there's nothing technical about it. We meet the 400-foot buffer, period, and that's what we're required to meet. We comply with the ordinance. We're required to comply with the provisions of the ordinance, and we comply with the provisions of the ordinance. We are not required to provide setbacks that are not required. All right, we meet the ordinance. It was also represented that the RVs in our park would be against the edge of some manufactured home lots. Now, that is just incorrect. The conditional use ordinance does require that an RV park be surrounded by a landscape 50-foot buffer around all boundaries. The ordinance requires a 50-foot buffer. Our plan provides a 50-foot buffer. So no RV site would be closer than 50 feet to any manufactured home site. Now, the one exception to what I just said, as far as the manufactured homes, at the planning and zoning hearing, Mr. I think it's Chilwick, testified that he has a home that's a dwelling. It's not a manufactured home, that it actually is a dwelling. And it's located in the Massey Landing Park, which is the park that's owned by one of the Fawcett's entities. And he said that he basically pays county property taxes on that. And his home's located on lot 40 in the Massey's Landing Park. Now, in scaling that distance out, it appears that his home is approximately 400 feet from the proposed park. However, that 400-foot requirement does not apply to his house. And the reason for that is Mr. Chilwick acquired his house not by deed, of course, which would be the normal way you would acquire a home, but by a bill of sale. And what that means, basically, is the prior owner owned the house, and that whole chain of title was all by bill of sales. And the reason for that, as stated in the bill of sale, is that the house is on leased land. It's leased from Massey's Landing Park. So the 40-foot buffer only applies to dwellings that are on property of other ownership. In this case, that house is situated not on property of other ownership. It's located on property of the applicant's ownership. So again, that buffer requirement does not apply to that, even though it appears to be meant anyway. Now, in support of what I just told you, I'm going to submit some documents for the record. And basically what that amounts to is the zoning code definitions that I referred to for dwelling in the buffer, Mr. Chilwick's bill of sale and the previous three bills of sale, and a site location map as to where his home is located, and the deed from Linford Fawcett to Massey's Landing Park, Inc., one of the applicants, for the area where the park is located. And I'll submit those in 1 second. Another point that I really didn't want to get into is what I have to. In the comments we received from the county, from the engineering department, part of those comments were comments from the Sussex County Historic Preservation Planner, all right, which is fine, except those comments indicated, they ordered that the applicant would prepare a phase one archaeological study. Now, I've never seen anything like that, and in my opinion, and of course I'll defer to the county attorney, there is no statute, there is no ordinance, there is no legal basis for the county requiring a phase one archaeological study. If that's something that is going to occur, there's got to be some legislative basis to be doing that, because it can't be done on an ad hoc basis in a haphazard manner.
Can't be done as a condition? It's a conditional use, correct?
Well, again, if there's some basis to it, now, as far as this application, the first of all, a good portion of this land has been farmed in the past, so it's disturbed land, and that's a good portion of the land that's on the north side of the property. The second thing is the county has already approved this for 120-unit development in 2007. Without any expression of any concern about that. Dr. Otter did do a cultural resource report, which is in our exhibit book. And in that report, what he basically states is, which is just common sense, that topography, the high ground, is normally where you'll find old dwellings or archaeological sites and things of that nature. And in fact, there was archaeological findings that were made on Mrs. Fawcett's property here, because that is the high ground. If you've been down there, there's a rise and a rise down. And that's the logical place where things would be found, which makes perfect sense. You go to the high ground, you don't go to the low ground if you're going to be doing something of that nature. The other thing is, in our plus comments, the state has a historical preservation office also. They recommended that that studies be done if we encounter human remains or anything of that nature, which is a state law. But again, there is no requirement from the state office to do anything of that nature. And where it does become a requirement, if you seek any type of federal permits, which normally come up during Army Corps of Engineer permits, if you want to put in docks or bulkheading or things of that nature, they do require compliance with that, and they will work out a scope of study for what they want studied. And we are going to be applying for permits, so we will have to do some archaeological studies as required by the Army Corps of Engineers. But my point is, I did contact Mr. Parsons, the historical planner. Quite frankly, and this is where it gets confusing, he indicated to me that he agreed that he didn't have authority to require that. He merely meant it to be a recommendation, and that he was going to submit a letter revising that to a recommendation. And, well, make a long story short, I received a letter today or an email earlier this morning from Mr. Izzo saying that the comments they submitted are their comments. And I read that as saying that you, the county, are requiring my client to do a phase one archaeological study that, quite frankly, would be in the neighborhood of $15,000 to $25,000 to do. I've never heard of anything like that. I know of no basis to it. As I said, I'll defer to Mr. Moore as to whether you have authority to do that. Anyway, I'm raising an objection to that as a requirement. I had to address it in the record because it's in the record.
Is it a requirement or a recommendation?
What's that?
Is it a requirement or are you saying a recommendation? But what you're saying, it just sounds like a recommendation, but I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you, here, the only comment in the file is from, again, the county office, mm-hmm. and it says, a phase one archaeological survey shall be performed to locate any archaeological sites on this property to be submitted for my review and comment. And it's signed by the Sussex County Historic Preservation Planner. And Mr. Izzo sent me an email saying that is their position. But again, I wanted to raise it for the record. That's my position on it.
Well, Lawrence could easily answer that, right, Lawrence?
Jim quoted it correctly.
He did, right. Right.
Said shall.
Yeah. But it can, and Everett, you might want to think about it. It could be, we do have the ability to make that a condition. It's not a requirement, but we have quite a bit of freedom when it comes to putting on conditions if we have good reason to, right?
As Mr. Fuqua said, if there were good reason to. Right. I have never seen the language shall have an archaeological study, this type of archaeological okay. study, by the Sussex County planner.
But at this point, nobody's required him to do anything. It's just we're still at the public hearing.
That's
been required, right?
Again, I just wanted to raise my concern for the record. And the last, my last point, and again, and this is a very important point because it concerns the Sussex County Comprehensive Land Use Plan. Some of the opponent's attorney, Mrs. Fox, and I, we agree that the future land use element and the future land use map in the comprehensive plan are an important part of the comprehensive plan. And the plan itself states on page 3-7 that the importance of the future land use plan, it states the importance of the future land use plan, and it indicates that that plan is probably the most influential part of the comp plan. And as you probably recall, Delaware law provides that a proposed rezoning or development must be in conformance with the land use plan. And that was really the whole reason when land use comprehensive plans were developed, that any change of zone has to be in conformance with the plan. Now, we agree up to that, and that's where our agreement ends. For the reasons I've already stated, our application fully conforms to the comp plan. I cited all the different sections of the plan that we comply with. But the most important reason is that our site is located in a designated growth zone. And that's a plan that you, the county council, created in the comprehensive plan. Now, the reason that that is of such importance is that it is in the growth areas that the county has determined to direct growth. And the plan states on page 3-9, this plan seeks to direct the county's most concentrated forms of new development to growth areas. And that includes most higher density residential development and most business development. Now, our position is, without any question, that we are in the environmentally sensitive development area, and that is one of the designated growth areas. The opponent's position that they stated at the planning and zoning hearing is that the environmentally sensitive development designation is merely an overlay and that the site's underlying designation is a low-density area. Now, the reason that that is important is that in the low-density area, our proposed use, they argue, would not be consistent with the guidelines for permitted uses in the low-density area, which are listed in the plan. And that would be a problem for us. But there's a fatal flaw in that position. And I think that flaw is absolutely clear from the comp plan itself. On page 3-8 of the plan, under the heading, "The Structures of the Future Land Use Plan," the plan states, and again, this is very important, "The future land use plan divides Sussex County into two types of planning areas. There's growth areas and there's rural areas. The growth areas and the rural areas each include subcategories. The environmentally sensitive development area, which is the area we're in, is a subcategory of the growth area. The low density area is listed as a subcategory of the rural area." And in addition to that, on page 317 of the plan, under the heading "Rural Areas," it states that the various types of growth areas identified in this plan are designed to accommodate concentrated levels of development. In contrast, Sussex County envisions the remainder of the county as predominantly rural landscape where farming coexists with appropriate residential uses and permanently preserved property. And the first type of rural area listed under that is the low-density area. So the low-density area, I'll make this simple now. The low-density area is in contrast to a growth area, right? The rural areas, the low-density areas, are outside of the growth areas. So in name, in use, and in the comp plan designation, Long Neck Road is not a low-density area. And the point is this. It's not possible under your plan to be in both an environmentally sensitive development area and in a low-density area. You can't be in both. Okay, you can only be in one or the other. And we are in a growth area. We are in the environmentally sensitive development area. So any argument that we are in a low density area is without any basis. And again, I'll defer to Mr. Moore to explain the complexities of the land use plan to you.
He's smiling.
So as I said, our site has no relationship to the low density rural area. And any argument to that effect is without any merit. Again, I have some exhibits that I'm going to submit, just listing the sites that I referred to. For all the reasons I've stated, our application complies with the zoning ordinance. It conforms to the comprehensive plan. It's based on substantial evidence submitted. And in particular, please remember about that resort transit bus, because that makes this site incredibly appropriate for this use. And in closing, I would just say that not only is this site appropriate for this use, it's actually ideal for this use. I don't know how you could come up with better facts for this type of a location, for this type of use. And on top of that, as you heard, the Fawcett family, they're entitled to use their property in a manner that is justified by the facts and the law, and I think this evidence that's been submitted is such justification. And with that, we will conclude our presentation, of course, subject to any questions you have.
Before we ask for other people to speak in favor, does council have any question of Mr. Fuquay or any of his witnesses?
Mr. Coleman or Mr. Deaver.
Yeah, it was approved for a number of homes, and then you say that then there was the economic crunch, and then now they've gone to RV, and are they saying that it's just not appropriate or for what was 107 dwellings? What was the reason again for that, switching from dwellings to RV park?
It's not the demand for the type of approval or the demand for the type of product that was approved. There is no demand for it. It's
no demand for the homes? That's what you're saying?
Yeah, there's no market for it right now. Builders aren't building those, and there's no market for it.
Thank you.
Don't sit down, Jim. We'll just, you might as well stay up here.
Kind of on that same thing, we've first of all, the county has not denied this landowner, you know, the ability to develop their land. We've approved the subdivision, 120 units, right? It's an approved plan.
Right.
Currently, is still approved.
Yes.
Okay.
Extended.
Now it is the environmentally sensitive district, and if 120 units was considered, you know, being development sufficient, wouldn't 322 sites? When I look at your site plan, now I don't have the site plan of the 120 units, and I will request that so I can compare the impact. But it looks to me like your 322 sites here have a much more impact on an environmentally sensitive developing district than the 120 units. So the 300, because I look here, it's just, I don't know where you would have reduced 44%. Could you show, you claim you've reduced this 44%. I don't know where you'd be able to put an additional 44%, because by the time you put your amenities and your parking and you've got everything, every inch pretty much covered of the 35, there's only 35 acres that's buildable. And when you add out 322 sites, that's about four sites per acre, four families or four whatever. Where we had at 120, that was even much less dense. So this is even more dense, in my opinion, or more has more of a negative impact on an environmentally sensitive developing district than what we currently have on the books approved, which the county was supportive of, you know, of that project. So can you tell me why this doesn't have a greater impact than what we've currently approved?
Mr. Cole, I'm tempted to ask you to repeat the question. But
okay, well, just we got 100. No, there's only.
I understand.
When I add out what you have, you've only got 35 acres that you can build on. And of the 35 acres, we were going to have 120 homes or 322 sites of this campground and amenities. When I look at this site plan, and again, granted, I don't have the other one in front of me, but I dare say it will look like it will have a. Not as much of a negative impact on the loss of trees, the impervious area, et cetera, all the things that we're concerned about, that we're supposed to be concerned about in the environmentally sensitive developing district. So we're not against development. We've approved development for this site. But what I want to do is tell me why this is...
Mr. Colt, two
will
things...
Will not be as much of an impact as what we got.
Two things, just so there's no confusion. The 44% reduction that I referred to... In the original material that was sent to PLUS, the Massey's Landing Park was included in that.
Oh, okay.
The mobile home park?
So what you've eliminated is what you've reduced?
Yes. Because
you had to?
Yeah. You have to.
Well, okay. But what we're looking at is no reduction in that.
That was done.
No, I got it. Okay.
Actually, it was no reduction in numbers.
I assumed you meant on what we're looking at, there was a 44% reduction, and that was the impression I had, but you've cleared that up. Thank you.
Again, this site was laid out, as you know, there's required buffers, there's required improvements, there's required size of the RV sites, and that's how you come up with the site plan. The approved development, the RPC development, Mr. Cole, it is in tab 4 of the exhibit book.
You have it. Tab 4 of the big book?
Yeah, the big book.
Big book shows us. Okay.
So it shows the lot layout, and as I mentioned before, they were a combination of single-family lots and duplex lots. It's approximately, you know, the same area as the... As the RV park.
Wait, I'm looking at a campground again.
Tab 4. It'd be behind number 4.
Huh?
Behind number 4, and it's in like a slip. Or not? Is it in a slip or is it?
Yeah, they're connected to the
book. Connected. Okay.
It's on three pages, I believe.
Okay.
Or two pages. So you can see the lot layout. It was on both sides of the road.
Right.
But it's almost like a cluster.
Now, the point I'm trying to make is when I look at that, which plan is more sensitive to the environment, to the average, you know, logical person looking at these. Would this 120 lot subdivision versus this, if we're trying to, again, protect the environmentally sensitive developing district, we're not against development because we've approved this.
Well, yeah, I don't
but
think
this
you can,
seems to me less.
I don't think you can make the jump that more is necessarily worse than few, which is what I think you're
doing.
Well,
when you look at some of these large lots, Jim, and then you look at your small lots and your little site plan shows three little trees, you know, and then how you can cut these out and make those three trees be in those certain positions throughout the place. There's going to be a dramatic loss of the trees in this plan versus this plan.
Well, I disagree with you.
Okay, that's all right.
When you have a park, obviously it's centrally managed. Right. So all any type of fertilization, things of that nature are all done by the park. If you have individual homes, lots of times that's done by the individual homeowners and it's not necessarily controlled. As I said, the site area itself is approximately the same. The park intends to retain as many trees as possible. Obviously, okay. Trees will be lost for some construction, as they would be lost for construction in the RPC.
Right. But
I can tell you that in an RV park, trees are not just pretty, but they're a tremendous amenity. People want those sites, obviously, because they're shade provided.
But the county has no regulations restricting any type of trees removal, or it's your intent to try
well,
to
no, there's,
maintain trees.
Well, I mean, there's been many conditional uses that have had conditions on there that the removal tree had to be approved by the Planning and Zoning Commission, or at least effort would be made to limit it. And as I said, there's a selfish motive.
No, there is. No, I agree. No, I don't disagree with you. The other question is, I was going through the PLUS report, and it referenced park models, and the council has been talking about park models here and how they are impact, you know, Sussex right. County and these campgrounds. And you've referenced how you're going to put park models there, but you'll move them to high ground or something like that. Do you have any proposal on to what extent, what percentage? Because in the past we have actually said only a certain percentage would be this, a certain percentage is this. Because if you're saying we need a campground, that means you're appealing to a transient type of camper, a mobile RV type unit. And this park model is like a miniature mobile home. They're two stories. Most people wouldn't think of that as being something that would be for a campground. How many park models do you propose for this project?
38
out of the 322.
Right, and the just so you know,
that could be a condition because I didn't.
Yes.
It's not a condition, but. I'm just asking. We in the past, Jeff, have put limits on certain types of units.
Because
they're permanent.
What's stated in the zoning ordinance is that in a campground, you got to have an RV. You got to have a tent. You have to have a camp trailer or equipment designed for camping, and that's what a park model is. It's camping equipment, so it's designed for that use. Just so you understand some of the rationale on it, and I might be a good example of this, there's people who, as you know, are RVers. They go out and, you know, that's their vacation, that's their style. Sometimes they have friends that want to go who don't have an RV, so this would afford them an opportunity to come experience the whole ambiance of being at a camper park. They rent the place there, they use that, maybe someday they buy a place or whatever. Or you have a family gathering where some family is going to come. Again, you can rent one of these park models that are going to be there. And I do want to mention to you that no of these RVs, of course, will be stored, kept at this site. When the park closes, all of the transient RVs will leave. The park models would be moved from where they're located over to the south side of Route 54, or at least to the high grounds. They have to be removed from the floodplain area.
Took some photos of park models, and they're like I say, they look like miniature mobile homes. They're pretty permanent. How do you propose to move them? I guess to the high ground if a storm. The lady said she cleans out her park on a hurricane. There's no way you can move a park model during a hurricane.
Actually, could I have are these the ones that we're going to use?
Yes, those are mine that I move all the time.
These at the.
Let's see what her park model looks like. Because I can show you some that I've got here.
These are the ones that are at the Ocean City site that would be similar to here.
Okay.
Are they on wheels? What are they?
Okay.
Yeah, they can be hooked up and pulled out. I think Mrs. Walsh indicated that it can be moved in 20 minutes.
Can we have order, please?
I got one going down around Cedar Neck Road here, Jim, which is two stories. It has a special truck. It has lights in front, a car with lights in front, a car with blinking lights in the back. That's how they move them down the highway, a park model, because I guess they need special permits. And that was coming out of Cedar Neck Road. What guarantee we would have that particular park model in this particular park? Because I'm sure they have all kinds of products out there.
Well, I mean, short of micromanaging the operation of the park, I don't know what to tell you. I can tell you this. It's certainly the intent and the experience of Castaways that they operate a very high-end, very well-run park, and they're going to be the ones renting these, and it's certainly in their interest, again, to have a very acceptable and attractive park model to be used. And I mean, it's kind of, a self-fulfilling need to do that.
Are you saying these are in Ocean City now?
These are the ones in Ocean City.
Here's.
Or, I'm sorry, let me.
Yes, sir. Those pictures are my actual park models, which are normally on a waterfront lot, and I move them inland to protect them during the winter. Those are my actual units that we move with a pickup truck. And as you can see, the HVAC is attached to the unit. It takes 20 minutes to unplug, unhook, hook to a truck, pull inland. So when Irene and Sandy were both coming, those were hooked to a truck and pulled inland in a day. And I have 9 of them.
And you own these?
Yes, sir, we do. Mm-hmm. And they do have a VIN number, and they are considered an RV.
Now, the Massey Landing Project won't necessarily own the park models, is that correct?
No, they will.
We will.
You will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes. they'll be owned by the park and rented.
And how many do you plan on having there?
You said 38, I thought I heard.
What's the percentage? What is the percentage of these?
38 park models.
Yeah, it would be 10%.
A little over 10%.
And the reason Mr. Fuqua pointed out, a lot of the people who come and visit Castaways, we host family reunions and such, and not everyone in the family owns an RV. Most of these park models are rented by family members of those who have RVs. And we like this particular manufacturer and this particular park model, so I don't know why we would deviate from that particular design.
Like Jim says, we don't like to micromanage too much, so we wouldn't do it. But the problem is there's a wide variety of park model products out there. And
I work well with this particular vendor, and we've, as you can see, we've sort of perfected
the
science.
So then there's no issue, Jim, that making
it. And how wide are these park models?
They're 399 square feet, and I believe those are 12 foot wide.
I don't know.
So
there's no problem, Jim, making a condition that the 38 park models would be privately owned by the developer or the park.
No, that's the intent.
Okay,
just trying to tighten it up a little bit, because. Okay.
On that same vein, could someone from the outside bring a park model in of their own?
I guess theoretically someone could come in a truck, but it wouldn't be, I mean, someone would have a regular RV, a self-propelled RV, rather than something they'd be hauling.
How many of the sites do you propose to be seasonal sites?
Seasonal?
None.
Would that, is that, you don't have any problem with that being a condition?
Now, the intent is that these would be rented on a weekly, bi-weekly, you know, tops monthly basis.
Sites.
The sites, yes.
Okay.
As you know, the some places where something there is too long, they tend to grow roots and things of that nature. This is a turnover place. It's a transient type of park.
Let me just add to Mr. Cole's question here that, you know, in the file, Mr. Lang mentioned that there is an approval from the state fire marshal that we just recently received. One of the conditions of his approval is that these are transient sites and not seasonal. So
Okay.
You could add to that condition if you chose to, but he has put that condition on the property.
We saw many campgrounds transition to permanent sites, and they never moved.
So help me understand. I haven't seen one of those like George has. It's a unit that has no plumbing, obviously. It's
like an RV in that when you put it on a site, you hook up the sewer, you hook up the water, and you hook up the electric.
Oh, it looks like an RV. It looks like a mobile home to me.
Well, that happens to be two stories.
It looks like a mobile home.
I see. That one happens to be two stories.
So it's got plumbing and electric and that type of thing. So it's not cabin type of thing.
That's what they use.
Yeah.
They're not built on a foundation or anything of that nature.
No, but
they're moved.
They permanently on wheels. Oh, they could be put on wheels. Mm-hmm.
They
are on wheels. Do they stay that way permanently on wheels? That's how they look.
Yeah, because again, they have to be moved. So
yeah. Okay.
Mr. Phelps,
could you speak to the history of the canals there? They just seem kind of out of place in the current land use state of the property. Are they? They're not natural, I'm sure.
No, these are man-made, and if you look at the, at some point in time back in the 50s, it was apparently the thing to do. So, obviously, this is our site here. They're here, and if you go down along that road, they're in a level location.
Was it a means to drain the rest of the property so that it could be used for something?
Actually, what the family told us, Mr. Phillips, was that Mr. Fawcett Sr. at one time had planned this to be a campground, so he created those canals, and the width of the land mass that was remaining was the size of two campsites. So that's why they're configured the way they are.
What letter you got from the historic planner? You say you got that today?
No, the original letter was submitted before the planning and zoning meeting, and I can give you the date. It's.
Can I get a copy?
There's a copy in the record, but I can give you a copy. It's dated May 22nd.
I have a copy in the record. I can make it available.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me see yours from time. And you say the traffic impact study was done in 2005. Was there anything done more recently?
No. Again, as we stated, the information that was done on that study in 2005 included 11 committed developments down in that area, again, many of which have not been built. Now, when the study's done, though, all of those developments are considered as having traffic impact. So they're already taken into consideration in the traffic.
Anything done in February?
But when the original counts were done, and it might be Mike, maybe you can address that better, but they do counts, but then they have formulas to project what the traffic count would be at other times. DelDOT has that from their records.
I assume you're referring to the counts of when they actually counted it, the time of the year. They did two different sessions. The weekday counts were actually done in October, but as Mr. Fuquay stated, there are seasonal adjustment factors that DelDOT applies so that they basically estimate an increase of traffic that might occur in the summertime. The Saturday counts were actually done in August.
Okay.
Any other questions from council?
I'm reading this letter from the planner, and he seems to think that there are archaeological, certainly values there to be looked at. I mean, that's interesting. You say anything more about this? Have you talked with him?
Yeah. Like I said, I didn't really want to get into this, but I tried to. I did speak with them, and I understood there was going to be a revised letter, and I spoke with them this morning, and then I got an email from him indicating that he had spoken to Mr. Izzo, his immediate supervisor. He had ordered that he retract the statements as submitted to me in the proposed letter. And he also asked me, please do not call my office anymore regarding this matter.
He retracted this?
You've been a pest?
I didn't think so.
You said he retracted?
You repeat again what he said.
And who said it?
with those. Dan Parsons?
That's the email I got.
And read it again, please.
Okay, I'll read this again. I didn't want to get into this. I'm just going to read what I have here. Mr. Fuquay, as I stated during my phone conversation with you this morning, Michael Izzo is my immediate supervisor. He has ordered me to retract my statements as submitted in the letter I provided to you by mail. Now, that's not the letter you have, Mr. Okay. Phillips. This is a revised letter where he was going to say it was a recommendation. Okay. He then says, so please do not call my office anymore regarding this matter. Furthermore, if you have any questions regarding our comments, put them in writing and we will respond through proper channels. Now, I will admit, I got a little snarky when I responded to him.
I'm shocked to hear
that. And I said, Dan, I must say that I am confused by your email. I was under the impression that the proper channels for dealing with the County Historic Preservation Planner would be by contacting the County Historic Preservation Planner. Who is or are the proper channels? Sorry for any problems this may have caused, but I was trying to resolve a position taken by your office for which I think there is no authority or justification. That's where it stands.
But it remains that he says there's a known cultural resource on the Massey's Landing site, a prehistoric archaeological site. That remains, does it not?
Yeah, Mrs. Deaver, in the exhibit book that we submitted, there's a cultural resource study that was done by Dr. Ed Otter, who's an archaeologist.
Okay.
All right, and that was done back in the time of the 2005 application. And there were findings of, prehistoric, Indian things.
Real grounds. Uh-huh.
That were found. But there's a map in there, and it shows and where they were found. They were found on basically Mrs. Fawcett's property.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, if you're down there, and Sussex County's not a hilly place, but if you go down there, you'll see it rises up there and then rises down.
Mm-hmm.
That obviously was the high ground. And Dr. Otter says in his report, normally you look for those topographical features because that's where you're going to find
it. Is it only that
area? What's that?
Only that area.
Well, there's no way to say anything. I mean, there's prehistoric things in many locations. And
you fall asleep, fall in his chair.
So he sent you that email suggesting that you disregard the letter, but not this letter, another letter. And that letter said that he was retracting his comments of this letter.
The way it came down was that letter was received, and I questioned the letter because I had never heard of the county ordering a phase one study. And rather than get into this today, I contacted him to say, I don't know of any authority. In fact, I called Mr. Moore, and Mr. Moore suggested that I contact him. So I called Dan. I spoke with Dan. Dan pretty much acknowledged that he didn't have the authority to do that. It was really more in the lines of a recommendation. And I said, I have no problem with any recommendation you have. That's your job, and you can recommend it, but I don't know of any authority to require it. So I went back to him, basically saying, why don't you do something just to clarify this, that it's a recommendation?
Okay.
I believed up until this morning that he was doing that, and when I called him this morning, he said he had prepared a new letter that he had submitted to Mr. Izzo, his supervisor, to review, but it hadn't been submitted yet. Because I had come over yesterday afternoon to check the record, and there was no letter. Dan said, I'll send you a copy of the letter so you can see what I did. And I said, that'd be fine. And I was really just going to leave it alone. So I did get the letter, and I said, okay, that's fine. It's a recommendation. Then I got
that letter on record somewhere, or is it just between you?
You know what? It's not an official letter, so I didn't want to get into it. Because it wasn't really submitted. He sent it to me so he could see what he was going to say.
He said you can't show that letter because I've been told to stand down and leave everything alone.
The email says what it says. It says he has ordered me to retract my statements as submitted in the letter. And then I wrote back and said, hey, I thought I was in the regular channels by contacting you. I then did get an email from Mike. And he said, Jim, the engineering department submitted our formal comments, which is that letter.
Okay.
All right. He says, if you have questions, please direct them to Dan in writing, and we will be glad to respond to them. Well, that's what I was trying to do. So then I sent another email, and I said, Mike and Dan, Please provide me with the legal authority for the county engineering department or the county historic preservation planner to order a phase one archaeological survey be performed. It's in writing.
You
it's my question.
Answer?
I was sent at 11:22 this morning. I'll at that point in time, I had to leave.
Interested in that answer.
Okay. From what you're saying, at that point, he was saying it's a recommendation only.
No. The only letter I have says I'm being ordered to do that.
Yes.
And like I said, we're going to be doing, hopefully, you know, with your approval, we're going to be doing some permitting with the Army Corps to put in some docks and some things. And we're going to have to do some archaeological stuff anyway. So it's not that I'm saying, no, we won't do this. I'm just saying, mm-hmm. you can't order us to do this.
I think we understand it's not a regulation.
Right.
It would be a recommendation. So we think we can get off this. We're killing too much time on this issue.
And I apologize for bringing
it up.
Okay.
Some of the staff people maybe not familiar with the ordinances and stuff and the different terminology. Maybe it was his way of expressing what he thought he was doing or something. Anyway, not a big deal, I don't think.
Any other questions
from
council?
We do understand it's not required.
Sure, it's not a big deal. I mean, if that was the case, then Mr. Izzo would not have said, we're not retracting this.
I'm just saying, at this point, we all know it's not a requirement, it's a recommendation. So
so what's the point?
Okay. The letter is a letter, who cares? You know, at this point, we all understand what the law is, and I think that's what we're concerned about here today, about the ordinance. So, basically.
Hearing no other questions from council. Hearing no other questions from council at this point, is there anyone else here today that would like to speak in favor of this application? Is there anyone else here that would like to speak in favor? Seeing none. Mr. President, would it be appropriate this time? It's been a long time to maybe stand up for 5 minutes and because it's getting warm in the room.
A stretch.
It'd be very appropriate. Would it be a 5-minute recess?
Yes.